these dormant parties have 1 week to reach a deal to restore power sharing, or a new assembly election could be called. Over the weekend, the Secretary of State met with some of the parties and Irish language campaigners at Hillsborough as the negotiations continued. Now, the DUP say they won't be bounced into a deal to restore the institutions, and this is what the DUP MP Gregory Campbell had to say this morning on Good Morning Ulster about an Irish Language Act.
Well, what I don't think we could do, and I'm absolutely certain that we could not do, is we could not say to the unionist community, nor indeed to the wider community, the existing position in Northern Ireland in 2020 and for a period of years is there are a number of minority languages, Irish is one of them. It already gets advantageous treatment at the moment without an act. But in your name, we've agreed a deal that gives them even more advantages than they currently have. No, we could not sell that, and we won't even try.
0330 80 55 55 on the phones today. As always, on the line we have the Slugger O'Toole editor, Mick Fealty. Good morning to you, Mick.
Hi, Vinny.
And Kieran Gillivine from Conrad na Gaeilge. Good morning to you, Kieran.
Good morning, Vinny.
Kieran, you're involved in those talks. You met with the Secretary of State, but wouldn't it surely have been better to meet with the DUP?
Well, that's something that we're very keen to do, and we've extended a number of invitations for meetings with the DUP. We met with them in April 2017, and we've engaged with the Ulster Unionist Party numerous times since then. And listen, our door, the invitation, it's an open invitation. We're more than happy and more than willing to go out and meet with anyone and put our case forward in an open and transparent way, and include the DUP.
And how did those meetings go?
The meeting yesterday, time will tell, I suppose, but I think it went well in the sense that we were afforded time to present our case, to outline the arguments, and to impress upon the Secretary of State two things. In the first instance, that, you know, his role, they're representing the British government, is to ensure the implementation and fulfilment of promises made by his government in 2006 in the St. Andrews Agreement around the Irish Language Act. And secondly, I suppose, he has stated his goal of restoring power sharing on a sustainable and stable way. And what we're saying is that the Irish language and rights for Irish speakers need to form a central part of that, because, listen, we all know we had 10 years of continuous power sharing there. And you know, we were lurched from one crisis to another. And more often than not, the Irish language was at the centre of that, be it the Curry Mayo Courts, be it the Leafa scandal, and the list goes on. So we need to try and move away from that. If we're going to build a type of sustainable power sharing moving forward, then we can't constantly have this source of friction there. And the best way to do that is by removing it from Stormont by placing legal parameters around how people can and can't engage with
it. You heard from Gregory Campbell on Good Morning Ulster today. He says that the DUP can't sell an Irish Language Act to their supporters. So how do they move on? How do you try and persuade them, that the people that do vote for the DUP, that it would be acceptable?
Well, listen, I mean, first and foremost, it's worth pointing out that I think the DUP bear an awful lot of responsibility for that, for it was the DUP for numerous years, and particularly Gregory Campbell, people like Gregory Campbell, who, you know, were quite frequently attacking and ridiculing the language and building up this hysteria and scaremongering around the language. And then when in response to that, the community have organised a huge campaign, which has forced this to the centre of political discourse. They're now holding their hands up and saying, well, there's nothing we can do about this because, you know, our community are in support of that. And frankly, I'm not sure that's true either. I mean, we have underwent monumental change. Two pieces of legislation have went through Westminster last year, which, you know, the DUP stood steadfastly against. When they went through, did you witness any huge protests out in the street? Did you witness a breakdown in law and order? Did you witness, you know, huge outcry over it? No, people move on. That's what happens. We've been living in a rights backwater here for too long, and it's high time.
Is that what you want? Obviously, that was rectified in Westminster, not Stormont. So is it Westminster where you believe the control should be? And should they make the changes?
You know, our priority would be that this would be sorted through Stormont. I think that, you know, having the local consent and the local buy-in and from all parties on that, I think, is preferable. And it does give a sense of ownership over the legislation from across the board. Having said that, we've now went 3 years without Stormont. There is another attempt to get Stormont restored again here. There obviously, Julian Smith has added fresh impetus to these talks and these efforts and stuff. But if that doesn't succeed, then certainly we will be exploring other options. And we've already made contact with people from across a range of parties in Westminster who will be very keen to support a piece of legislation. What's kind of strange and refreshing is that when we speak with people in Britain, from Scotland, Wales, and indeed England, that, you know, their attitudes to this are quite open. And, you know, they don't see the major issue around this. And indeed, I heard Peter Hain, making similar remarks this morning on Good Morning Arsenal. Well, this isn't the issue. This shouldn't be holding up progress, and we need to get it sorted.
One word that we keep using, or people keep referring to, is compromise. You know, is it still a standalone Irish Language Act and nothing else, or are you willing to compromise?
Well, I mean, listen, we've made the case numerous times. I think, you know, for what it's worth, there was a compromise made in 2006. It was called the St. Andrews Agreement. What we need to see is implementation of that. But in terms of our position on a stand, again, this is just based on international best practice. If we're going to have a piece of legislation, would it not be wise and prudent for us to look at other countries and jurisdictions that have similar legislation and say, well, what do they do right, what do they do wrong, and how can we replicate that model here? Why would we introduce a flawed piece of legislation that somewhere down the lane is going to cause problems and certain issues? Listen, the experts, the independent experts on this, people like the Council of Europe, people like the UN, people like the Welsh Language Commissioner in Wales, have all steadfastly said that the best way to do this is by having a single piece of legislation. If there are additional pieces of legislation to cover additional languages or additional areas, certainly have them, but there is no need to couple all these together.
So if an act goes through that doesn't meet all your demands, will you settle for that in the spirit of compromise?
We aren't in a position to negotiate. We put forward our case. We are a representative organisation. We have branches. People make their case to us, and we try our best to represent them. We will, we put forward our proposals. As I said, we've met with all the parties. We've met with both governments. We've been across Europe meeting with different parties on this, and we've held numerous public engagements around this. So the point I'm trying to make is, Vinny, you know, whenever a deal is brought forward, we'll reserve a judgment on that until we see that. But, you know, if it does fall short, we'll say that, obviously. But whether or not people listen to that, that's up to them.
Okay, well, Kieran, stay there if you can. Mick Fieldy, you were tweeting, inter-party talks are between parties, not five main parties plus one campaign group.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, I think, look, in Kieran's last response there, I think he gives you the answer. The truth is that Conor Na Gaeilge are a great organisation. Used to be a member myself back in the day. But they are only a lobby group. And although Kieran makes a strong case, I mean, quoting the language commissioner in Wales, who has an amazing amount of power, but the Welsh language is much more kind of written into, if you like, indigenous life in Wales, and much more kind of an accepted, politically uncontroversial sort of aspect of national life within Wales. I think there's we simply are sitting in a situation now where we have a tight deadline. And we've seen through Boris Johnson and Brexit just how tight deadlines can concentrate minds. The fact that something has to be done by the end of the week also limits the number of issues that can be dealt with satisfactorily. I struggle to see that if there's no consensus running across the parties for a movement on an Irish Language Act, how we're actually going to get that. Now, Kieran mentions commitments made by the SOS's Secretary of State's promises back in 2006. Well, of course, that was a different government. That was Tony Blair's New Labour government. And each one of those commitments that a government makes dies when that parliament dissolves and we move into a new executive. So I'm really struggling to see how we get to Kieran's favourite solution here of a standalone Irish Language Act, particularly when the DUP has so forthrightly said that that is one thing that they simply cannot sell. And if the DUP can't sell it, the way power sharing is set up, it simply won't go through and we'll hit the deadline at the end of it.
Well, let's let Kieran respond to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, just a couple of things on that. First of all, I mean, I don't accept the idea that somehow because there was a change of government, one party moving in, that suddenly an international agreement dies. I mean, The Good Friday Agreement was negotiated under a Labour government. Does that mean that when the Conservatives were elected that suddenly the Good Friday Agreement is null and void? It was an international agreement that's been ratified by two governments in the name of both governments, and those commitments remain outstanding. Now, we have had 3 years, since the collapse of Stormont. We've had 3 years of intense talks. We've had opportunities to lobby. And if we're telling me that suddenly we have a week left to get this sorted out and it can't be done, I mean, I just don't accept that, and I don't think that people back home should accept that. What have they been doing for 3 years if they haven't been sorting? This has been the number one priority area. If they haven't been sitting down and trying to sort this out, what else have they been doing while they've been getting paid and while the Secretary of State and everyone else has been flying in here for these intense negotiations? What else have they been doing during that period? So it's now time to get this sorted out. We have been living in a process where we've had 10 years of power sharing with 22 years since agreed to fair agreement. We've been consistently told that issues like rates and things that are politically sensitive need to wait until we embed the political process. We're now in 2020. It's time that we're brought in from the coal. It's time that we move from a position of being a rights backwater into a progressive, an open and plural society.
If the DUP, Kieran, can't sell an Irish Language Act and there's no deal, then we are possibly heading towards another election. Do you think that is what people want?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I would like another election. I'm not sure that would provide any different alternatives in terms of the outworkings, because even if there was a fluctuation in votes and even if certain parties lost votes and other parties gained them, we would still, by and large, be left in the same scenario.
Sorry, Kieran, but that's the brick wall that's facing us here at the end of the week. You know, the way Smith is playing this is that he's just using the existing legislation that says that by the time we get to next Monday, there has to be an election regardless. So he doesn't have to do anything. He's just sitting there kind of waiting for our local parties to get their act together to get some kind of, I hesitate to say comprehensive agreement, because I don't see how it can be comprehensive. I mean, there's loads of stuff that the parties want to do, but there's also, this is a negotiation to reopen a legislative assembly, and the clue is in the table. It's a lawmaking assembly, and that's where the law needs to be made for Northern Ireland, not in Westminster.
I couldn't agree more, Mick. And you know, Baffert for me, during those 10 years from 2007 on, we've had three public consultations on this, all of which demonstrated huge public support for an Irish Language Act, and zero progress was made. Proposals were brought forward finally in March 2016, and again they were vetoed down at executive level. So on the one hand, you have an outstanding commitment. You have a thriving and growing Irish language community who look across these islands and see rights are afforded to their Celtic cousins in Wales and Scotland, rights are afforded to Irish speakers in the south, and they are denied them here. And we're being told now that, oh, because there's a deadline, because you have a week, because the DUP are still opposed, although there's no legitimate justification for that opposition, that we're supposed to immediately accept that and move on. And I think people, because of the 3 years of no power, and people have woken up and say, we demand a better society, we demand a rights-based society, and if we want to see this type of stable government, then it needs to be done on the basis of rights and equality.
Kieran, would a cultural act combining what some would see as a British rights with an Irish language act, would that be a way forward?
As I said, Vinny, you know, we aren't really in a position to negotiate around these issues. In our view, what we have done...
No, but you're part of the negotiations, so...
What we do is we put forward our case, and we put forward a case very, very publicly. We put the documents, proposals through to yourselves numerous times, to all the political parties, to journalists, we've met with people, we've sat down with people, saying, here is the case for an Irish Language Act, here are our proposals, and here's why it matters. And if people then come back and try and cobble together various deals, we'll look at that based on what their proposals are. But what we're saying very, very clearly is that if we're going to do this, we've had 3 years of ruction over this, we've had 3 years of to-ing and fro-ing. If we're going to do it, why not do it right?
030-30-80-55-55. Thomas, first call. Good morning, Thomas.
I'd like to ask both your commentators a question there. Will the presence of an Irish Language Act or the absence of an act kill anybody in the next 6 months, 3 months, 3 weeks? Because I'm looking at the news today, students in Cornmarket out protesting or pleading for help with mental health issues in schools. There's reports an 11 and a 15-year-old have killed themselves in recent days. Our society is broken. And this here is just constitutional politics at its worst. And people are killing themselves and they're dying in hospital.
And what change do you think, Thomas, would a return of Stormont make? What difference?
They have to do their job. Well, actually, I don't like it, because they've had 22 years and they're still in the first week of negotiations arguing about symbols. Somebody just said it's a legislative authority or whatever. They spend too much time talking about the big issues and they ignore the stuff that is important to people like me. education, health, jobs. And I would welcome them. Or like, I hope the talks fail because we need a clear out. Brexit was in stalemate. A lot to do with the DUP as well. We got a new parliament and it's through. We need a clear out and a storm out, and a new election is the only way forward, because what we're going to get out of these talks now at best is going to be another funch.
So if you want another election, do you think that would genuinely bring a lot of change in terms of the outcome? Who would get those seats?
Step by step. I think people are so sick of it. If there's no agreement this week, you're going to have the nurses in strike, the pressure is building, and everybody that listens to your show is put to be tied. They're just sick of the whole lot of them. Well, you've only one way of changing it, get out and vote. And most people who stay at home because they've had enough of it, get out and vote and change it. Because that's the only... People like me, I vote, but people who don't, who sit in the House and criticise, they have no right to criticise. Get out and vote and change it. And it's health, it's jobs, it's education. It's not flags. You know, people are dying. Like an 11-year-old and a 15-year-old committing suicide in the last couple of days. Kieran, an Irish Language Act will not save those people.
Well, Kieran, do you fear that you're losing support from some people, maybe like Thomas?
Listen, I mean, the health crisis is absolutely horrendous. We've been out there. I mean, I've been out in solidarity with striking nurses and stuff. And, you know, it's been a crisis well beyond the more recent period. I mean, the crisis in the health service goes back many years. And it's an absolute disgrace and it's appalling. And, of course, issues like health and education, of course, they deserve much more prominence and much more importance than issues, very small issues, like an Irish Language Act. And indeed, we've been saying from the very beginning that the issue of a rate for Irish speakers is a minuscule, is very, very minor. But it is also the barometer by which huge swathes of people here are using to judge whether or not the DUP are actually sincere about building sustainable power sharing in a way which does build mutual respect for identities here. Because, you know, it is a touchstone issue here. It is the issue that people are using to judge the basis of the DUP moving forward on. So it is incredibly important. And again, but it is a small issue. So let's get this sorted. Let's get the British government to implement their obligations, move forward, and let's deal with the serious issues like health and education.
Jim next. Good morning, Jim.
Hello there. Happy New Year to everybody. I'm someone who would support the Irish language. I don't speak it. I've tried to. I have many friends who speak the language and are very involved in it. And I'm just confused what's on the Irish Language Act. You know, we have schools, Irish language schools, street names. You can learn it anywhere. We've got Al Culture Land here in Derry, which is a massive big facility to support Irish language, and nobody can tell me what's in an Irish Language Act that we don't have at the minute.
Well, look, Kieran, maybe you can fill the Jim in there.
Yeah, well, Jim, we have a scenario here whereby the language is completely dependent on the goodwill or other ways of politicians. So, just to give you a very, very small example, we had obviously a LEFA scheme which was hard fought for by the community, which provided minuscule funding for disadvantaged young people to go to the Gaeltacht to enhance their learning of Irish. The DUP took over communities in 2016, and before the end of the year, they withdrew that scheme arbitrarily, with no equality impact assessment, with no judgment, with no nothing. And what we have seen during 10 years of power sharing is that our community in particular bears the brunt whenever there are political crises, whenever there are sources of tension, or whenever primarily the DUP feel like it, that they can arbitrarily attack and remove funding, remove different things, I guess, because we have absolutely no rights. We do not exist in law. And additionally, if we travel here, I'm sitting in Belfast, if we travel across, we don't see, Irish is invisible in the state. You don't see it unless in those centres that have been built from the bottom up with very little support from the state, that must be said in the outset, and that has came obviously later. So we're operating in a completely different plane from, as I said, language speakers in Wales and language speakers in the South. So what we're talking about here is party. What we're talking about is bringing us up to a similar level. Will it solve all the issues facing the Irish language? Certainly not. But will it do any damage to the language? I don't think so. It's worth giving a try. It's something that has been called for internationally. It's something that has majority support of MLAs in Stormont, and it's something that the Irish government has supported as well. We finally need the British government and the DUP to step up to the plate and to do this.
Okay, Kieran, I know you need to go, but just one last question. Gregory Campbell, he referred to it as a minority language, and he said this act would elevate it above other minority languages. What's your response to that?
Vinny, again, I mean, you know, and I don't expect everyone maybe is an expert on this, but, you know, in the field of linguistics and stuff, It is universally accepted that by the UN, by Council of Europe, and by others, that Indigenous Native Minority languages must be protected and enhanced further because of their status. And in essence, if Irish doesn't exist here, it doesn't exist anywhere. Therefore, there is additional obligations on us to support the Irish language. And indeed, I remember I was reminded from Gregory Campbell's statement this morning there that when 2017, during this crisis, Darling Foster made remarks about, well, if we're having an Irish language act, why don't we have a police language act? And the police council himself came out and said, well, actually, well, there's no need for a police language act, and we support the need for an Irish language act, because across Europe, people get this. People understand this. We have this legislation. And indeed, in terms of Gregory Campbell, again, what I would like to say in terms of one of the biggest motivators for people that have been protesting over the last 3 years in record numbers has been the consistent and outrageous attacks by people like Gregory Campbell. That has motivated people more than anything else to demand the change that's necessary and that have been denied.
Karen, the only thing I'd say to that is, curry my yogurt, I heard far worse at school when I was trying to learn the language in secondary school. The people who slagged Irish off, we're absolutely unmerciful. I think we're being a little bit...
Although I'm sure the people that were slagging it off, as you referred to, Mick, were not an elected MP.
No. But what I'm saying is we've heard worse growing up from our own people. And it's just that we choose to take major offence at something, Mick, which is a stupid, totally unfunny joke. But
I'm
going to say, hold on, Kieran, you've got a fair old crack of the whip here. The Leafa scheme was reinstated shortly after the controversy of all of that. So the Leafa scheme, as far as I understand it, it's only 50 grand, but I understand it's an important amount of money in terms of targeting kids who can't afford to go to the Gaeltacht. But it was reinstated. So we're talking about old money here. This is not current. And it was rescinded by the DUP before they left the executive. So we need to be careful here that we're not just harbouring a kind of a victim culture here. When you talk about Northern Ireland being a rights backwater, there's three major pieces that were promised in the original Good Friday Agreement. One was a Bill of Rights for Northern Ireland. The next one was a Charter of Rights for the whole island, north and south. And that meant that both the Southern Legislature and Stormont had to bring in parallel legislation to make that work, and the Irish Language Act. None of those, despite, as you rightly say, there's been a lot of consultation, none of it has been made into law. Why? Because it's not easy to introduce that kind of level of rights because it inhibits political action and political discretion, and let alone the North. No one in the South wanted to touch the idea of a Charter of Rights legislation. I know that because on Slugger, back in 2005, we ran a whole big consultation on that with the University of Cork. I'm trying to get politicians in the Republic to engage with rights-based legislation.
Okay.
It's virtually impossible.
Let's let Kieran respond to that, because, Kieran, I know you said quarter past and we're already way over that.
Yeah, no problem, Vinny. Just quickly on the first point that Mike made there, listen, I accept, sometimes, in terms of offence and people taking offence, I get that. Listen, there's no problem. I have a thick skin and people say things in the spur of the moment, all this. But I suppose what that reflected and what's important here, that not only was it word, but it was also deed. So while the DUP were attacking our community with those statements, with and that wasn't the only one, you could go back and pick out numerous examples over the years, they were also at the same time rejecting development proposals for Irish medium schools, removing funding, renaming boats. So it wasn't just that they were coming out with these statements, they were following up and misusing their power to limit and to deny basic services and rights to the Irish speakers. So it was when the absence of rights was compounded by the insulting remarks that were made. And again,
okay.
Furthermore, it adds to the current difficulties that the DUP are having in selling this to their own community. Because if we convince people that the Irish language is a bogeyman, or that it's this big, big bad enemy, then suddenly, a few years down the line, we are facing negotiations in which an Irish Language Act may form part of it. Is it any wonder that they're facing difficulties selling that to their community?
Okay. Kieran McGillivine from Conrad na Gaeilge, thank you very much.